Faith Talk 1500, the Paul Edwards Program in the Center for the Study of God and Culture, 866-423-9578 is our phone number to engage. Rob Bell's book, Love Wins, was controversial even before it was released on March the 15th, on Tuesday. As a matter of fact, so controversial that Harper One decided to push up the release date a couple of weeks. It was originally set for release at the end of this month, but the media tour began in earnest last Sunday night in New York City with an interview, a live stage interview that Rob Bell did with Lisa Miller of Newsweek, and then continued with appearances on all of the morning show shows, ABC and so forth. But Rob Bell, I don't think, was expecting what he got from his interview on Tuesday with Martin Bashir of MSNBC. After going round and round for about 3 minutes with Rob Bell, about whether or not it was necessary to have a relationship with Jesus Christ in this life, Martin made a comment to Rob Bell that I think perfectly sums up what many of us are feeling about Rob Bell's book and his position on universalism.
You've just indicated, though, one of the problems with this book, which is, in a sense, you're creating a Christian message that's warm, kind, and popular for contemporary culture. But it's frankly, according to this critic, unbiblical and historically unreliable. That's true, isn't it?
No.
What you've done
is
you're amending the gospel, the Christian message, so that it's palatable to contemporary people who find, for example, the idea of hell and heaven very difficult to stomach. So here comes Rob Bell. He's made a Christian gospel for you, and it's perfectly palatable. It's much easier to swallow. That's what you've done, haven't you?
Martin Bashir is best known for his documentary on Michael Jackson, Living with Michael Jackson. More than 27 million American viewers tuned in back in 2003 to watch that, and he remains the only interviewer to ever conduct an exclusive interview with Princess Diana. And, of course, he followed Ted Koppel at ABC's News Nightline back in October of 2005. He's now the host of the Martin Bashir program on MSNBC weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. And Martin Bashir, it's an honor to welcome you here to the Paul Edwards program.
Great pleasure to be with you, Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Rob didn't seem prepared.
Well, I think one of the problems with the previous interviews that were conducted, and I say this in speculation, I have no evidence for this, but certainly judging by the questions that were asked, I can't believe that the book was read. Because if you read the book, even from a purely historiographical point of view and the treatment of history, it is evasive and, frankly, disingenuous. When you get to the point of biblical criticism, it gets even worse. So, for example, let me give you an example of something that he does in the book. He takes a question that was asked by Martin Luther in the 1500s when he was asked, whether God saves everybody at the end of the day, whether universalism is truly the message of the gospel. And Luther, in the letter responding to that question, has this line, "Who would doubt God's ability to do that?" Question mark. So Rob Bell includes just those words in his book. But he doesn't go on to quote the rest of the letter. And what does the rest of the letter say? Well, I've studied the rest of the letter. I found it. He says this, "No one, however, can prove that God does this. But whether he does give faith or not, is it impossible for anyone to be saved without faith? Otherwise, every sermon would be in vain, false, and deceptive, since the entire gospel makes faith necessary." Now, that's a small example of where Rob Bell has taken an historical document, selectively quoted a very small portion of it to prove his view, and actually ignores the rest of the letter. Now, I don't care whether you have no religious faith, that you're a committed Christian or not. That's not historiographical methodology. That's not how you treat history. And that's what he does in the book, repeatedly. Now, let me give you another example. He goes to Scripture, and he quotes John chapter 3, verse 17, again, to argue his point, where Christ says that he did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. Okay? So Rob Bell says, there you are. He's come to do that. He doesn't even read the next verse. What does the next verse say? Whoever believes in the Son is not condemned, but whoever does not believe is condemned already because he has not believed in the name of the only Son of God. How can you possibly be taken seriously as a biblical critic, if you take one verse and build your theology upon it and don't read the immediate verse that follows the one you've quoted. I mean, you tell me, is that really trustworthy academic theological work, or is that basically disingenuous?
In what you've just said, Martin, you have affirmed for me my initial reaction to your interview. After I watched on video the 7-minute interview with Rob Bell, my immediate reaction, my immediate thought was Martin Bashir knows more about historic Christianity than does Rob Bell, and I believe that sincerely. So the question for me and my audience becomes, as I've watched this video go viral, particularly on evangelical blogs, the question that is being asked by many evangelical Christians, is Martin Bashir himself an evangelical Christian? What is your own faith story?
Well, let me come to that in a moment, because the critical thing that I think your audience is bothered about, and this is what informs my work, is the idea of truth-telling. And I have to tell you that my own career has been injured a number of times by my desire to get to the truth. I've been the one who's been criticized. You mentioned earlier in your very kind introduction that that this story has gone viral, that there's conversation on the blogs. But if you read some of that conversation, about 50% of it attacks me for asking those questions.
Sure.
And here's the point. The essence of the journalistic process is to find and tell the truth. It doesn't matter what one's personal disposition is. That's what your vocation is as a journalist. Now, there are some people, I might be one of them, who would say that our theology actually shapes our understanding of truth-telling. Because of all people that should be bothered about the truth, the church and Christians should be at the very center of that discussion. And that's why this book is so deeply disappointing, because it is disingenuous. And it's coming from somebody who is standing publicly expecting people to listen to his view on the most profound questions of life. Now, if I'm examining this guy's book and I find the kind of historical errors that are in it, I find what I feel to be deliberate avoidance of material that doesn't work in his favor, how can I possibly take the view that I'm going to simply accept him and what he says about issues of truth? It's very difficult to do so. So my answer to your question is, in one sense, it's irrelevant. The task of a journalist is vocationally to get to the truth. When I was interacting with Michael Jackson, the world was saying he's the Messiah, he's a genius, he is absolutely super talented. I happen to agree he is musically a genius. Nobody combines his composing skills, his dancing skills, and his vocal skills in one body. Nobody ever did that. But was he the Messiah? Well, let's examine the truth about that. And that's what I did. Now, the consequence of that has been that for a long period, I had to have some additional protection because people wanted to kill me for asking that question.
Mm.
But the driver in this matter is truth-telling. And your audience, okay, your audience is bothered about what the truth says. And I read the book carefully. I then went away. Thankfully, I had a pre-publication copy. I went away to two libraries. I contacted three academics in the area of ancient history who are respected and well-regarded, two of whom have no personal religious faith whatsoever, but are so highly regarded as ancient historians. And I said to them, help me understand this. So here's another example. In the book, Rob Bell quotes an early Christian writer, Origen, who believed in eventual universal salvation for everybody, regardless of how you respond to Christianity in this world and the claims of Christ. But guess what? There's another early Christian writer called Arius, who taught that Christ was not fully God. Now, every church council up until the 19th century has rejected both individuals' theses, both Origen and Arius.
Right.
Guess what Rob Bell does? He goes with Origen, and he doesn't mention Arius. And I said to him, why? If you're prepared to be so selective about one and accept one, why don't you accept the other? That would be more consistent. Again, his historical method is open to question. Now, he might say and come back at me and say, look, as he did in the interview, I'm a pastor. I care about people. I care about helping them, you know, deal with their faith in this life. But I'm asking you, does that mean that the standards of truth-telling are somehow less important when you're pastoring people? If someone's very life and the shape of their life is based on what you're telling them, are you really saying to me that the standards of truth-telling are somehow immaterial? I mean, surely they're more important, aren't they?
Certainly, certainly. You look at the Apostle Paul in his pastoral letters to both Titus and Timothy and the emphasis on sound teaching. Sound being the base of the Greek word being healthy teaching. Certainly, when Rob Bell says to you, I'm a pastor, meaning I'm not a theologian. I don't have to go that deep. I work with people. I don't work with texts. It's an outright denial of the heart of what the man of God is to be. He is to be, first of all, committed to the truth. I watched this interview you do with him. And I get he seems to be a man who desires questions more than answers.
Right. Well, here's the other issue here, which, of course, I again, looking at the text and Rob Bell's theology over the course of his work, and I pulled off as much as I could in terms of his sermons and so on. There is a theological issue, I believe, at work here, and it's really a fracture. Is this about making Christianity palatable and comfortable for the modern contemporary setting? Because if it is, then let's accept that it is, and let's also be completely and utterly honest that what we're doing is reshaping biblical Christianity in a way that is reductionistic for the purpose of people to follow. And when I put that to him, he denies it, because he doesn't want to be accused of being anything other than in the mainstream of evangelicalism.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the text and what he's doing and what he's trying to deliver, you can only possibly conclude that what he's trying to do is make all of these things acceptable. And by the way, and this I think is something I can share personally, I come and was born into a Muslim family. I come with all of the kind of concerns that Rob Bell has about not offending people from other faiths. He makes great play in his book about the work of Indira Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, and how Gandhi's work has to be recognized as being very helpful, good, positive, and tries desperately to put him inside the tent of those who are the subject of salvation. But I come from a position on the outside, and yet I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, hang on a second, here's the traditional, historic presentation of Christianity, here are the biblical texts, and here's this individual chipping away, shaping, reshaping that theology. Now, in one sense, I can understand why he's doing that. I mean, who wants to hear things and truths that are hard to take? But if you go to any culture in any world, any part of the world, Christianity will offend it. If you go to the Middle East and you say Christianity recommends monogamy, they'll say that's great, absolutely, sexual purity. But if you say Christianity also recommends forgiving your enemies, they'll say, what are you talking about? What? I'm not doing that. But if you go to the West and you say, oh, Christianity recommends monogamy, everyone rejects it. I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. It's old-fashioned. It's obsolete. It's prehistoric. But if you say to them, oh, well, Christianity recommends forgiving your enemies, absolutely, we accept that. Mm. The point I'm making is that if you're going to spend your time trying to reshape the gospel and the Christian faith for the purpose of where you're delivering it, then you're going to end up with something that is half what it was intended to be.
Right.
And it offends people everywhere. That's the point.
Yes.
You're not going to get to a position where you're going to deliver the absolute essential elements of Christian theology to people and get them to walk away and say, what a fabulous story. Why do you think people spend money on bogus, homeopathic, New Age treatments? They do it because they're sold a story that this will make you feel good. And people are desperate to hear that message. And so they dispense hundreds of thousands of dollars on all kinds of things which have no evidence in medical science for their efficacy. And yet that's what happens repeatedly. And all I'm saying is, if you're going to write a book about the essential elements of the Christian faith, and if you're going to purport to represent biblical theology about how it applies in this life and how it applies in the future life, then you have to accept that you're going to be critiqued on that basis. And I think one of the problems for Mr. Bell was he hasn't really come across people who have done the research and done a little bit of work in the area. And I'm not a theologian. I'm a journalist.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, that was what I was trying to do.
Well, at the end of your interview, he looked like a deer caught in the headlights, quite honestly. We're talking with Martin Bashir here. He's the host of MSNBC's Martin Bashir program every afternoon, weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. about his interview this past Tuesday of Rob Bell from Mars Hill Church up the street from us here in Grand Rapids. I got the impression, Martin, from the interview that you conducted with Rob Bell, that he almost at one point took on the posture of a witness who did not want to incriminate himself. He boldly answered your first question, are you a universalist, by saying no, and then proceeded in his explanation to paint himself as a universalist, quite frankly. It seemed like every answer he gave was a denial on its face, and yet the explanation that he gave became an affirmation of exactly what the concerns are in the evangelical community about his universal leanings.
It was interesting in terms of asking. One of the things that's been raised on the blogs and has been used to attack me has been that I was repetitive. But the reason I asked him three questions, which were effectively the same question, was because he didn't answer the question.
Correct.
He didn't answer the essential question. And the essential question that I was putting to him was simply this. Do you believe that regardless of how you respond to the Christian faith or the claims of Christ in this life, that it has no bearing whatsoever on your future eternal destiny? That was all I was asking him. And he couldn't answer the question. In the first case, he said, of course it's important. But then he says in his book, God's love melts everything in the end. And that at the end of the day, you can be antagonistic to Christianity, but after you die, God's love will melt your opposition and you'll walk into heaven. Well, again, I'm trying to find any theological justification for that thesis, and I was struggling to do so. And so your observation, I think, is right, that there was a problem in the way he was doing that. Now, one of the other things that emerged as I began to study all of this was that Rob Bell grew up in a fairly restrictive evangelical environment. And I think he admitted in the interview quite candidly that this book is in part a working out or an exercising of that experience. And I think that's actually really telling, because for many people who have been brought up in, let's say, less than open, less than articulate, less than educated environments, it can feel as though the Christian faith that they've been presented with is not only ignorant and incapable of withstanding questioning, but also oppressive. And I think that in a way, this book, if you're prepared to read it in this way, is almost the psychological outworkings of a young man who actually had a pretty difficult time. And I'm deeply sympathetic to that. I don't believe personally that any theological position should be closed off and not open to question. I remember when I was 12 years old, I was at a mosque, and I asked an imam a question about the historicity of the Prophet Muhammad. And I was told that if I asked that question again, I would burn in the fires of hell. I was 12 years old. That moment actually became one of the most important experiences of my life, because I realized that any theological position which couldn't be challenged was not worthy of following. It just was not worthy. If you can't ask a question, then that's wrong. But here's the point. I got the impression from Rob Bell that his upbringing didn't encourage the kind of intellectual questioning that you encourage on your radio show, and that I'm sure many people in the modern setting accept as being absolutely essential to pursuing one's own personal pilgrimage and faith. That's absolutely essential. I don't think Rob Bell had a chance to do that. And to my, you know, I think in looking at the text, in many ways, he's ventilating the painful experience, and I'm sympathetic to that.
I want our audience to hear the question as you posed it to Rob Bell. Here is Martin Bashir at the end of the interview with Rob Bell on Tuesday. I think in a question form, perfectly summarizing exactly what motivates, what makes the emergent generation tick, especially as it's represented by Rob Bell.
How much is this book you working out your own childhood experience of being brought up in a fairly cramped evangelical family and really finding that difficult as you became an adult? How much is this actually that?
I think, Martin, you put your finger on exactly what many of us feel is the driving force behind the so-called emergent church, and that is a group of young men who are sort of producing a reaction to their upbringing in a very strict fundamentalist Christian environment. And I like to say now the junior high youth pastors are actually pastoring the church, and you know, bring your soda pop and your jeans into the building, and let's have a popcorn fight and a pillow fight. And it seems to me that's where Rob Bell is coming from. It's sort of a reaction, and I'm wondering how you came to put your finger on that.
Well, you just saying that, I won't be so discourteous as to ask your age, but if you're over the age of 30, you will be condemned as a Luddite, as a Jurassic Park remnant for raising that issue, because you will be accused of not being allowed, or you won't be accused, you'll be told your view is irrelevant. And that's one of the problems with this whole issue, because what happens is when the discussion starts, it becomes a closed discussion, because everybody who's ever lived in the past, who's ever had a theological training that might be orthodox, that might be mainstream, forget it. That's out the window. Because now what we're focused on are some really subtle, nuanced, carefully conceived ways of discussing Christianity. And only this generation get it. And that's why Rob Bell's book is number 4 on Amazon.com. And that's why it is selling like hotcakes. That's why his financial advance was substantial. That's why he is, in inverted commas, a huge success. Because there are a lot of people who have closed off a sector for the discussion and said, this we can only speak into. The rest, ignore them. So that's the first danger. And it's problematic for a number of reasons, not least, if you think about it, history informs the present. We can't take the view that because there have been nuclear meltdowns in the past, we're going to completely ignore what happened in those circumstances as we deal with the Fukushima plant in Japan now. That would be idiotic, and nobody would accept that. And yet, that's exactly what's happening now, where many people are deemed to be gray-haired, old-fashioned, and ignorant, and out of touch. But the reality is that the reason why this fracture is occurring, I think, is because a lot of those people from previous generations, if you like, are raising difficult questions for this particular group of people. And the other thing to bear in mind is, if the church in the past has been so backward, inward-looking, unconnected to culture, how has it survived? That's a question that I wanted to put to Rob Bell, because, you know, look, I've got 3 children. My son is 22. My daughter's 20. I have a youngest who was 15 yesterday, Eliza. I can do a lot of things to try and impress them. But if I start rapping like a rapper or dressing like a 15-year-old, that's going to be problematic for them.
Yes.
and they're going to find that difficult. But that does not mean that my parental responsibility ceases or that they will never listen to me because I don't dress like them and speak like them.
Mm.
And that's the point. What I'm trying to get at in that argument that I was having with Rob Bell was that you have to think about what the purpose of this is. And if your destination and your purpose, if your aim and goal is to deliver a Christian message that is more easily digested for the contemporary world, then you must accept that what you're dispensing is a Christianity that is not comprehensive and fulsome in the way that it's been presented by others. And the problem, I think, for Rob Bell is if he were to say that, his whole constituency would run for cover because they would look at that and say, hang on a second, is this guy really in the center of mainstream faith issues or is he not? And so I think the reason for the obfuscation, the doubt, the one foot in one camp, one foot in the other, is because he's politically strategic enough to realize that if he comes out with a position that is categoric, it might damage his popularity. And then where do you go? You don't sell your books. You don't pay back the publisher's advance. So I think that that's really what the issue here is.
What was Rob Bell's demeanor when the interview ended?
We shook hands. I thanked him very much during the commercial break. He seemed discomforted, slightly surprised, I would say. But I didn't get an opportunity to speak to him at length afterwards. There's been some nonsense online suggesting that I refused to shake his hand and all this sort of stuff. And, of course, deliberately so, because people want now to paint me as the evil, you can't attack the message, attack the messenger. But actually, it was a very courteous end to an interview. I would have loved the opportunity to have sat down with him for an hour, because I think that it would have been even more illustrative of some of the issues that I've been raising in this conversation with you. I don't think this matter is by any means resolved. And the other thing I've been very interested to note has been the explosion of interest and the expression of many sentiments proves that there is a large cohort of people who up until now have almost been biting their tongue, have almost been concerned to be civil, to be respectful, to not have a blazing row, as it were, in front of the children. And I think that what's happened is that interview has somehow broken that dam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the discussion now has become more open, and so it should, because these are very, very important issues for all of us. And if we're not going to have an open discussion about them, then that would be completely wrong and something that we should oppose. On the other hand, and I hope that I wanted to be courteous and respectful, and I have nothing but a civil attitude to Mr. Bell. I think that he's, in many ways, as I've said earlier, the victim of his own experience, as to some extent we all are, and I think that this book in many ways was the outworking of that. And, the other thing I would say about him as well, I do think that he wants to extend what he says in his book is the overwhelming love of God to people. I do think that's his motive. I do think that he recognizes, because as he says, his book, the title of his book is Love Wins. That's what he wants to dispense to people. That's really at the heart of his message. And I think, he should be credited for wanting to do such a positive thing. The question is whether in so doing, he's actually failing to observe some proper fundamentals of history and also some proper fundamentals of biblical criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And, in so doing, that's what I was trying to raise as an issue.
Did Harper One or Rob Bell or his handlers lay down any ground rules in advance for the interview in terms of this question is off limits or in that regard?
Absolutely not. In fact, I can say this with some confidence, that people who generally take that view don't come on and be interviewed by me. Their handlers won't allow it to happen. I read a tweet somewhere by somebody called Joel Osteen, whose only statement was disastrous PR as a consequence of that interview.
Mm. Yeah, I think the interview hurt him. I really do. Not that you hurt him. I think Rob Bell hurt himself by not being prepared. I think that he thought he was going to sit for a secular interviewer who knew nothing about Christianity and the history of the church and the history of Christianity. And I think that he was totally taken off guard, which brings me back to my original question to you, given what you've already stated about your personal theological views having absolutely no relevance whatsoever to the interview, and I understand that completely. But on blogs, as we've mentioned frequently during this 30-minute conversation, Martin, on blogs, people are saying, oh, well, Martin Bashir, he attends Tim Keller's church, New York's Redeemer Presbyterian. This is why he was so hard on Rob Bell. Can you set the record straight on that?
Look, my personal faith for the purpose of that interview was entirely irrelevant, because whenever I do an interview, I try my very best to understand the issues at stake. I interviewed Michelle Rhee, the former head of the Washington, D.C. schools district, yesterday on the show, and she was very unhappy with the way she was interviewed because I asked her some difficult questions about the issue of education. So I want to assert that I didn't do anything other than what I would expect of myself. However, I do attend Redeemer Presbyterian Church. I am married to a wonderful Christian woman, and I am myself a committed Christian. But that does not have a bearing on what I was doing. And I would hate for people to think that because of that, I'm therefore aligned with a particular denominational attack on Rob Bell. And that's why I'm reluctant to discuss my personal faith. It had nothing to do with my personal attendance of any denominational church or body. It was everything to do with the fact that when I read the book and I saw what I believe are egregious disregard for history and a treatment of biblical text in the most selective and perfunctory manner, that was what drove my interview with Rob Bell. It has nothing to do with what church I attend. And indeed, I do know people who have been very helped and enjoy attending emergent churches. My daughter Phoebe, who's at university in the UK, is being baptized on Sunday, and she attends an emergent church in England called the Edge Church. It's not the sort of church that I would attend personally, but it's where she goes. And we are absolutely delighted that she's a member of a congregation and she's prepared to be baptized by full immersion on Sunday. But what I did in that interview was what I believe is central to the journalistic task, and that is, what is the truth here? What is the truth? That's what we should be pursuing. And that's what I tried to do in that interview. And I accept that it was uncomfortable and may have been on occasions slightly antagonistic and adversarial. But all I was trying to do, and I hope your audience will forgive me if they were offended in any way, all I was trying to do was get to what this man really believes about this life and the life to come.
Well, I know my audience pretty well, Martin. I don't think an apology is necessary to this audience. I'll tell you, for what it's worth, when I finished watching your interview with Rob Bell, my first question was not, I wonder what church Martin Bashir attends. My first reaction was, finally, an interviewer on mainstream television who is getting to the heart of the issue. Whether or not you were a Christian was not a concern to me. What your political background was not a concern to me. What I saw was someone whose career I have followed since you were on Nightline, and I was pleasantly surprised to see an interview with journalistic integrity take on the very serious nature of these questions and do it in a way that is not at all offensive. The people on the blogs who are offended by the questions that you asked Rob Bell, the people who are offended because you rephrased the same question three times, are the people who want to answer the question in the same vague obfuscation that Rob Bell answered with. So For what it's worth, I never made a conclusion or attempted to make a conclusion about where you were coming from theologically. I was just pleased to see a journalist do his job.
There was an interview with Tiger Woods this morning on Good Morning America, and I didn't see the interview, but I was talking to a colleague who described it as the worst absolution of journalistic responsibilities that they'd ever seen. This is a man who, over the course of his career, raised millions of dollars in income off the back of his genius as a golfer and his perfect family life. The interviewer asked four questions, none of which touched on any of the issues of matter, not a single question. And I watched the interview that was conducted with Rob Bell on Good Morning America on the same day as I interviewed him. And again, three questions were asked. And the thing is, when you think about these issues, for the secular journalist, it's often not really of that much importance. It's quite nice to laugh at the Christian church having rows about the afterlife, heaven and hell, whether these things matter. The purpose of living in this life. Many journalists look at that and say, you know, whatever. They can say what they like. I was trying to bring some basic journalistic practices to these issues because I happen to believe that if we can't scrutinize matters of faith, issues of life, then I'm not sure what we can. I mean, if we're going to examine a meltdown on Wall Street, or the government's handling of the budget crisis, are we not going to treat people who purport to be holding out the purpose of life to us? Are we not going to treat them with a similar level of disciplined scrutiny? I find it very, very depressing that happens. But I'm relieved that you don't feel that. And as I say, I am entirely open to apologizing to anybody who felt that my behavior was discourteous or rude. It was never intended as such. I was only wanting to get to the essence of Rob Bell's position. And I was asking questions in repetition because I was not satisfied that the audience was being given an answer that was either coherent or basically understandable.
Oh, absolutely. I was shouting at the computer screen saying, Rob, just answer the question. I mean, it's a yes or no answer. And there was no yes or no. It was yes and then giving an answer that ended up being no or no and then giving an answer that ended up being yes. And so I think that the ire that you've raised is among the emergent crowd who saw their Goliath come down. In a very unexpected way, their champion was not at all prepared to answer the questions and not be self-incriminating, and he chose to obfuscate. And I didn't see anything, and I don't say this just because I'm talking to you. I say this because I've been in radio 8 years. I've conducted interviews myself. Certainly not. I am not anywhere near the caliber of an interviewer that you are. But I want to say to you, I did not come away from that interview from a professional perspective, feeling that you had badgered Rob Bell or in any way done anything offensive. You got to the heart of the truth, and the interview spoke for itself. Rob Bell spoke for himself, and if Rob Bell has been hurt by this interview, Rob Bell hurt himself, not the interviewer.
Well, thank you for that kind reassurance. As I say, there are some who you can never please, but I was only trying to do my job. It's been a great thrilled to talk to you. Thank you for the opportunity.
It has been my pleasure to speak to you, and I look forward to hopefully having an opportunity to speak again.
Thank you again, sir.